It's a great pleasure to be here at the Rivetra Institute, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about my work. So the title is 3D Gravity, Universality in the Macro Series. This is based on two papers, the first of which I wrote together with Tom Hartman, who's at Cornell, and Bogdan Stoica, who is a student at Caltech. And the second one I wrote with Alex Maloney at McGill. Basically, the talk will, roughly speaking, be split in two parts. The first part will mainly be about universality, and it will be mainly based on the first paper. The second part will be about Poincaré sums and existence, and will be based on the second paper. Sort of the central theme of my talk will be modular invariance and applications to 3D gravity. So if you want, an alternate title could have been something like modular invariance and 3D gravity. Now, I assume that most people are familiar with modular invariance, or shall I just very briefly sketch the definition and so on? Okay, I mean, basically, it's invariance under elements gamma of SL2Z. And basically, this group can be generated by two elements, one of which is the S element, which maps tau to minus 1 over tau. And the other element is the T element, which maps tau to tau plus 1. And then what we're looking for is we're looking at two-dimensional conformal field theory. So by the general arguments, we know that the partition function of such theories should be invariant under the full modular group. Sort of arguably the more interesting of those elements is the S element, and actually the first half of the talk will be exclusively about the S element. In the second half, we'll also talk about the T element. Sort of the general intuition is that T invariance is relatively simple to impose. You just have to make sure that the spin is integer or half integer for fermions. And so if you're given a partition function which is invariant under S, but just by shifting around a bunch of left moving and right moving weights, you should end up with something which is fully modular invariant. And in a sense, I mean, that this is sort of the naive intuition, but in a sense, the results that I'll present in the second part of the talk sort of tell you that this is roughly speaking right. So if you only impose S invariants, then the results you get are almost the same as if you impose the full modular invariants. So the first half of the talk will be mainly about S invariants. So roughly speaking, what does invariance under this transformation here mean? Sort of the catchphrase is something like the light spectrum of the theory determines the heavy spectrum of the theory. That's sort of the slogan that people usually have in mind when they think about modular invariance. And sort of the most famous most famous example of this philosophy, of this slogan, is the Cardy formula. So basically, if you have we'll be interested only in theories that have the vacuum in their spectrum, and there's exactly one vacuum in the spectrum. So we know something about the very light spectrum, and then you know from very general arguments that this means that the very heavy states have to exhibit Cardy behavior, and that is the density of states should go something like e to the 2 pi square root of c times e over 3. And this holds for asymptotically heavy states, that is, for very large energies e. So what's one of the goals that we're pursuing here? Well, it's basically to make this statement here, this very rough statement about some relationship between the light spectrum and the heavy spectrum of the theory, more precise. So we want to make this more precise, make this slogan more precise. And so far, this is purely a question in two-dimensional conformal field theories. So far, this is interesting on its own right, but it has nothing to do so far with gravity. But obviously, there's basically in when you do holography, when you do gravity, there's one, you could say, killer application of, well, modular invariance and discarded behavior. And this is basically in finding a microscopic explanation of black hole entropies. So basically, the idea is that you start out with some black hole. Well, usually it has to be, for this to really work, it has to be a special black hole, like an extremal supersymmetric black hole and so on. But then using holography, you map it to some conformal field theories. And then what you're doing is you're counting states to explain the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. And it turns out that this thing here, this number of states that you get for asymptotically heavy states, this is exactly the correct behavior, the correct multiplicity to reproduce the correct Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So sort of that's the usual argument, and which from which it follows that you can at least in certain cases for certain black holes explain microscopically black hole entropy. But there is a rather large but here. So if we're being a bit more careful about the Cardi behavior and about black hole entropy, what's actually true is the following. This Cardi behavior that I wrote down here is valid in what I would call the Cardi regime, which is basically you can take C fixed, and in particular, you can also take MC small if you want to. And then the statement is that this asymptotic behavior here only holds if the energy is much, much bigger than the central charge. But what you actually want to explain black hole entropy is you want a different regime. You want this behavior here to hold in a different regime. Namely, you want something like a gravity regime. And that usually means you take C large. But you do not want to require that the energy is much, much bigger than the central charge. So this condition here from the gravity point of view is basically this means that the black hole has to be very heavy. But you would still want to have the Bekenstein-Hawking formula to hold for black holes that are not very heavy. So basically, what you're trading off is from the original Cardi regime, you're trading off the generality that the central charge can be fixed and very small, because in the gravity regime, you want it to be large. But then on the other hand, you want to relax the condition on the energy of the states for which the Cardi behavior should hold. And so to make an additional remark here, this thing here is completely universal in the sense that for any conformal field theories, well, for any conformal field theory, it satisfies some very weak conditions. In particular, you want it, the vacuum to be part of the spectrum, and there's only one vacuum, et cetera. But really, basically, for any healthy conformal field theory, this behavior holds. Whereas this behavior here, you wouldn't expect to hold for any conformal field theory, but this you only expect to hold for theories which are holographically dual to some gravity theories. And so what's the goal? What were we after? Basically, we want to understand for which types of theories this statement here holds, that is for which kinds of theories the Cardi behavior is actually valid in the gravity regime and not just in the Cardi regime. So we want something like a necessary condition on a CFT such that it can serve as a holographic dual. And sort of very, very long-term goal would be sort of give a complete classification of all conformal field theories. Or I should say, when I say conformal field theories here, I'm always talking about the two-dimensional case. I should have stressed that in the beginning much more. So what we're really doing here is ADS3, fundamentally ADS3 CFD2 dual correspondence. And the long-term goal would be to do something like a complete classification of all two-dimensional conformal field theories which can serve as some holographic dual to gravity theory on ADS3. And the result of the first part of the talk will be that there's at least a necessary condition on these theories. More precisely, it will be a necessary condition on the spectrum of such a theory, which will lead to the correct phase diagram of the conformal field theory. Any questions so far? Okay. So the partition function, just to introduce some notation, the partition function, a priori, the partition function will be a function of a complex parameter tau, which basically contains both the temperature and the angular momentum of the configuration that we're looking at. For simplicity, we'll start out with the case where there's no angular momentum, which basically means that we'll pick tau to be, let me get the normalization right, I times beta over 2 pi, which means that the S transform simply transforms beta to what I'll call beta prime, which is 4 pi square over beta. And then the partition function as a function of beta is simply given by the sum over all states of e to the minus b times e. So just as a convention, this should be read equivalently as e to the minus b delta minus c over 12. So the convention is that I'll normalize, if I write e, I always talk about the energy in the convention where the vacuum has energy minus e over 12, whereas the deltas are the actual honest conformal weights, so the vacuum has a conformal weight delta 0. That's just a question of this convention here is slightly more convenient in what follows. Okay. And then the statement is that this thing here, by modular invariance, we should have something like z beta is equal to z beta prime. Okay. Now the first goal is we want to make this statement here about the light spectrum and the heavy spectrum slightly more precise, or not just slightly more precise, but we want to make it more precise. And for this, let us define the light spectrum. And that we define to be the set of states for which the energy here is smaller than some small number epsilon. So sort of a very natural definition of the light spectrum in this convention here would be you just take all the states which have non-positive energy. Turns out, for technical convenience, that's not quite the appropriate definition. So you have to allow yourself a bit of wiggle room. So you introduce, I guess strictly speaking, I should really call this L as a function of epsilon, but I will suppress that. So you have to introduce some sort of smaller fudge parameters. So in particular, that the state of E equals 0 and stuff that's slightly above that is still included. But anyway, we're very close to sort of the naive definition of light states. And then obviously, the heavy states and heavy spectrum is given by everything else. So that's simply all the states for which E is bigger than epsilon. Can you see over here? Okay, very good. And then In a very natural way, we define stuff like Z of L simply as being the contribution to the partition function if you only sum over the light states, and Z F H, the same thing if you sum over the heavy states. So that obviously z of beta is simply given by z of light plus z of h. So of the contribution of the light plus the heavy states. So far, nothing very interesting has happened. But then it turns out that there's a, at least for me, was a rather surprising, quite general result, which tells you something about the contribution of the light and the heavy states to the free energy of the partition function. Namely, you can show, and again, let me stress that this is really a general result, which does not assume anything about large C limits and so on. This holds for beta bigger than 2 pi, so we are here in the low temperature regime. You can show that the free energy coming from the light states, well, you can show that the total free energy, so the logarithm of the full partition function, is sandwiched between the contribution of the light states and the contribution of the light states minus some correction factor. So the way I've written it here, it only holds for beta bigger than 2 pi, but you can always use modular invariance if beta is smaller than 2 pi to write down the other case, which will be completely analogous. And this inequality here is completely trivial. That's simply because you're assuming here that the contribution of the heavy states is positive. This side here is slightly non-trivial, but turns out that through a bunch of elementary inequalities and applying modular invariance, you can show that this is true. Let me stress that, so in a sense, this is a uniform, in a sense, it's a uniform inequality, as it doesn't really depend on any of the specific parameters of the theory. So the only thing it really depends on is the choice of your epsilon, but the idea being that you can choose your epsilon relatively small. So this really holds universally. But on the other hand, it's not uniform, it's not a good bound uniformly in the temperature beta, because as you can see, as beta goes towards 2 pi, so beta prime goes towards beta, the sort of the upper bound becomes worse and worse. So in particular, if you set beta prime equals to beta, then the right-hand side is just infinity. So this sort of this inequality here becomes completely useless. Okay, so in a sense, this is the main the main tool that we'll use to derive necessary conditions on the spectrum of conformal field theories to have the correct free energy phase diagram that you'd expect from gravity. So why is this thing useful? Well, as I stressed before, it does not depend on this inequality. It does not depend on any specific parameters of the theory. So in particular, it holds true uniformly for arbitrary central charge. And so basically what happens is that if we now switch to the case where we do have a large C limit, then this simply means that the logarithm of the partition function, so the free energy, is given by the logarithm of the contribution of the light states plus something of order 1 for beta bigger than 2 pi. So this is the case here. And again, as I said before, if you do, if you want to consider the case beta smaller than 2 pi, then you just take the modular transform. So I'll write log z prime l. This simply means it's log of beta prime instead of beta, plus, again, order 1, which holds for beta smaller than 2 pi. So the order 1 notation here refers to the large C limit. The idea being that, as we'll see in a second, or as I'm sure you can guess already, this thing here for anything which should correspond to holographic dual will be proportional to the central charge. So this will be order C. And this thing here, I mean, this order one thing really comes from that term here. And as long as you just pick a fixed epsilon, then this does not depend on the central charge. So in terms of the central charge, this is order one. Okay. So how does this help us? Well, basically we know, so the condition that we will impose is that we want our theory to have the same free energy that you'd expect from a gravity theory. And on the gravity side, you know exactly what the free energy should look like. In particular, it should be something like C of beta being given by C beta over 12 plus order 1 for the low temperature regime, and the modular transform of that, which I believe is beta square C over, pi square C over 3 beta plus order 1 in the high temperature regime. And why is that what we expect from the gravity side? Well, basically this is saying if the temperature is large, if the temperature is low, then the contribution to the free energy will just be the ADS vacuum. And in our conventions, this is the contribution that you get from the ADS vacuum. And then at some point, as beta becomes equals to 2 pi, as you increase the temperature, you will go through a Hawking-Page transition. And then if in the high temperature regime, it will be dominated by various black holes. It will be dominated by various black holes. And then again, by modular invariance and also by some honest computation, you can see that this is the result that you'd expect. So this is what we want our theory, or rather our family of theories, family in the sense that you want to have a large C limit, so you need to know, for an infinite set of the central charge, you have to have a theory like a symmetric orbifold or something like that. But anyway, for our family of conformed field theories, this is what we want them to satisfy. And actually, as you can see, this is very, very close to the actual result that we got over here. And actually, as you can see from here, the only thing we have to do to make sure that the theory satisfies this condition over here is to make sure that the contribution of the light states, so ZL should be exactly this thing here, and then automatically by modular invariance, and Z prime of L will be this thing. And it's very easy to see, for instance, if you take the simplest light spectrum, which say is only the vacuum contributes. So there's exactly one state which has energy minus C over 12. Then you get exactly, CL is equal to E to the C beta over 12. So this is in the case where there's only the vacuum. Then obviously this is good enough to have this condition here, and then by modular invariance this is good enough. So one example of a theory, I mean I shouldn't really call it a theory, but of a partition function which leads to the correct behavior is just simply having a vacuum and nothing else in the light spectrum, and then a bunch of other things which are basically, well, to some extent fixed by modular invariance in the heavy spectrum. And if obviously that's not a very good model for anything, because you expect there to be a bunch of other states. But if you have a bunch of other states, then it's very straightforward to see that, again, the condition is the contribution of this thing here should just give E to the C beta over 12. And you can easily check, or I should say at least to leading order in C, and you can easily check that this is the case if the following condition on the light spectrum holds. Namely that the density, now I'm going to write it as a function of delta, because it's sort of more natural to write it this way, should be smaller or equal to e to the 2 pi delta. And this is a condition only on the light state, so this thing here, we want this to hold for all states for which delta is smaller than C over 12 plus epsilon, or equivalently where E is smaller than epsilon. So the statement is, if you have a family of conformed field theories, or if slightly more generally, it's just a family of partition functions which you believe could come from conformal field theories, if the light spectrum satisfies this inequality here, then you don't have to care about the heavy spectrum at all. You just know that the partition function of this theory will have the correct behavior in terms of the free energy. So this is a necessary condition to have this behavior here, and it turns out it's also, well, if you assume that there's at least that there's one vacuum in the theory, it's also a sufficient condition to have the correct and phase diagram for the free energy. So in a sense, what you could say, this is some sort of condition that the theory has a sparse light spectrum. That is, there shouldn't be too many light states. It actually turns out rather amusingly, and that was not clear a priori to us, that if you take the most famous examples of such two-dimensional conformal field theories, which serve as a holographic tools, namely symmetric orbifold theories, then you find that they exactly saturate this bound. So in a sense, the symmetric orbifold theories have the maximal number of light states that is just, so the number of light states is just low enough to still give the correct phase diagram. If you take something else, like instead of a symmetric orbifold, you just take, you know, a bunch of a tensor product of theories, then this type of inequality is badly violated. So you know it cannot give the right phase diagram, namely, it cannot be the holographic dual of something, which is obviously what everybody expects. So no surprises there. Okay. Any questions so far? I promised that the result was going to be that the statement the light spectrum determines the heavy spectrum would be made a bit more precise, and sort of we made the first step in this direction because we know all about the free energy of what, given the light spectrum, we know all about the free energy. But now the question is, can you actually repeat this analysis in the not for the canonical ensemble, but for the microcanonical ensemble? So can you actually also find bounds or expressions for the heavy spectrum given the light spectrum? Again, you expect to be able to do that in the Cardi regime, because that's basically what the Cardi formula tells you. But now the question is, can you do it more in a more general regime? Can you do it for states which are lighter than Cardi states? And it turns out that you can do certain things. So basically, the idea is simply you have the result in the canonical ensemble, so you do a Legendre transformation to the microcanonical ensemble. And then it turns out that given this sparseness condition here, so if you know that the light spectrum satisfies the sparseness condition here, then it follows that the density of states, let's just write it at E as E to the S, and then S is, I'm writing it in terms of the energy. So this is given by, its leading order is indeed given as you'd expect by the Cardi formula. So this is just the naive Cardi formula that we have here. But using this analysis, the new thing is that now you can show that, again, given this sparse light spectrum, that the Cardi formula holds not only asymptotically, but for all states where the energy is bigger than C over 12. Or alternatively, where delta is bigger than C over 6. So this tells you that sort of if you have a generic conformal field theory and a generic spectrum delta, then let's write S here as a function of the energy. Then, you always knew that as soon as you were in the Cardi regime, so if this thing here is much, much bigger than the central charge, that you'd eventually get to the case where you do have the expected growth behavior. But down here, it wasn't clear at all what behavior you'd expect. And this formula here tells you that actually you expect that given, if you assume that the light spectrum is given by this thing here, then all the way down to C over 12, it tells you that you do have exactly the Cardi regime, the Cardi behavior that you would expect. And in a sense, this gives at least a partial answer to this remark about the gravity regime. So if a theory has this light sparse spectrum, then the Cardi behavior is valid all the way down to C over 12. So in particular, it also holds on the gravity side. This means it also holds for black holes which are not parametrically heavy compared to the ADS scale. But as you can see, so now what this means is if we fix the light spectrum, then the heavy spectrum, or at least the leading behavior of the heavy spectrum, is also fixed all the way down to C over 12. But there's still sort of a range of states where we haven't fixed the spectrum, namely the states which have energy between 0 and C over 12. And it turns out that you cannot fix the leading behavior of those states. The best you can do is, or at least the best we could do is, you can give an upper bound, which is given by 2 pi e plus pi c over 6. So basically, using this drawing here, in our case, we improve the situation a bit by showing that the cardiac behavior goes down all the way to C over 12. But then between C over 12 and 0 here, we can really only give an upper bound. So we cannot exclude that the thing does something like this or maybe like this, some such behavior. Again, rather amusingly, turns out that if you take a symmetric orbifold, then you will find that not only does it saturate this inequality here for the light states, but it also saturates this inequality here. So it really, the symmetric orbifold shows non-Carty behavior all the way up to C over 12. And then at C over 12, as follows immediately from our general result, it does indeed go into Carty behavior. So sort of the symmetric orbifold, if you want. Again, I'm sort of coming back to the symmetric orbifold because that's a very nice example for the general intuition. It's also one of the few examples where you actually know that such families of theories exist. So if you do that, then basically what you find is that you start at minus C over 12, and then there's a linear growth all the way in the, so this is again the entropy S. So there's a linear growth all the way up to C over 12, and then here at C over 12, it goes over into this square root. Well, it's not really a good linear growth, but it should be linear. And it goes over in the square root behavior that you expect from property. But sort of the takeaway message is that if you fix the light spectrum in this way here, then the heavy states, by heavy states, I mean states which have energy bigger than C over 12, are completely fixed, or at least the leading behavior is fixed. But sort of the intermediate states between 0 and C over 12 are not fixed. The best we can do is an upper bound. Maybe as a side remark, let me stress that this is really the reason for this sort of fudge region in between, or the reason that we cannot fix everything here is really that we're considering general non-holomorphic partition functions. So if for some reason you could argue that your theory gives a holomorphic partition function, maybe because it factorizes holomorphically, maybe because you're not really looking at the partition function, but at some elliptic genus and so on, the situation would be much, much cleaner. And there would be a much cleaner statement in the sense that if you fix all the light states where you have to define light in some appropriate but relatively obvious manner, then all the other heavy states would be fixed. So this is really, and the issue here is really that we're dealing with non-holomorphic objects where life is much, much more complicated. Anyway, that was just a side remark. And also a general excuse for why what we're doing is not trivial, which is essentially because it's a non-holomorphic object. Okay. Any questions? So as I said in the beginning, the general philosophy is that you just do S invariants and then T invariants won't change the story very much. And so still we would like to see if we can go a bit further and also do T invariants. Unfortunately, we couldn't really do that. And the main issue is that if you want to check T invariants, you have to introduce an angular potential. So tau is going to be complex and not just purely imaginary. And then that basically means that if you write down the actual definition of the partition function, there will be phases and minus signs. So all those simple estimates that we used here, which we could do because we knew that everything contributed positively, we can't do that anymore. So the story becomes much more complicated. And so the best we could do is, basically change. I guess on the gravity side, this corresponds to going to Lorentzian signature. So basically what you do is you define a new partition function, which is now a function of two different temperatures, beta left and beta right, both of which are still real, and which is defined simply as e to the minus e left beta left, e right e to the minus e right beta right. So now you're probing, I mean, before we only probed the spectrum in terms of the total energy, so E equals E left plus E right. Now we're sort of probing the spectrum a bit more deeply by distinguishing states which have different E left and E right, but the same total energy. And the point is that, again, so this thing here, we don't expect it to be modular invariant under SL2 Z. But it is still modular invariant under the S transform, which sends. So the idea being that you can choose then beta left and beta right completely independent, as long as they're real. And then the resulting object should be invariant when you apply this transformation here. So you're transforming both the left moving and the right temperature at the same time. So the condition is that this thing here is invariant under this thing here. Okay. And then you can repeat the analysis. I'm not going to go into the detail. The main reason I'm bringing this up is because the results that you get is sort of make a lot of sense intuitively from the gravity point of view. So the first thing you should do is you should go back to the definition of light states, because before we defined light states just in terms of the total over there, in terms of the total energy. Now you want to have a somewhat more refined definition, and it turns out that the correct definition, the appropriate definition of that, of a what I called a light state before, is a state which has either E left smaller than zero or E right smaller than zero. And sort of the correct condition that you have to put on this light spectrum here is you want to so the condition, the analog of the condition star that I had before, is that the density of such states, as a function of E left and E right, should be smaller or equal to the exponential of 4 pi. Let's just go with delta left times delta right square root of this thing. Where it's the usual thing, delta left being E left minus 0 with 24, et cetera, et cetera. So in a sense, this condition here may not be very interesting. I mean, it is what it is. Actually, it happens, not surprisingly maybe now, it so happens that, again, symmetric orbifolds completely saturate this condition here. But sort of what's more interesting, I think, here is the definition of this light spectrum here. So In this case here, maybe light spectrum is not such a good name. Maybe a more appropriate name would be the censored spectrum. Because the idea is that a state which is in this censored spectrum here corresponds to an object on the gravity side, which, if it was a black hole, would violate cosmic censorship. So basically, the way you can achieve this is you take, for instance, E right. Basically what this boils down to is the condition the absolute value of the absolute value of the angular momentum on the gravity side is bigger than the mass times the ADS radius. So any state in here violates cosmic censorship, which basically tells you that in your original theory of gravity, the original theory of gravity is going to have a bunch of standard fields, like, I don't know, gauge fields, scalar fields, and so on, and they can have whatever spin they want to have, basically, almost, but at least there's no such bound. And then there's also going to be black holes in that theory. But, you know, all the black holes will have to satisfy the cosmic censorship. So this means that there can never be any black holes which contribute to those states here. So basically, the idea being that if you fix the spectrum of your theory in the censored region, then you're still allowing for a bunch of black holes to show up wherever they want to. But you know that you never have to fix anything about black holes to fix this thing here, which is kind of neat, and which will this thing will come back later on to in the second part of the talk, so I'll go back to that. And then you can show that if this condition here holds, you do get the expected phase diagram. So basically, again, there's a phase diagram as a function of beta left and beta right, and there's a phase transition at the point on the hyperbola where beta left times beta right is 4 pi square, and then again you know up here, let's see, so that is low temperature, so this is the contribution of the ADS vacuum, and down here it's black holes. So again, if you impose this condition here, then you will get the correct phase diagram. So in a sense, this is again a more refined necessary condition on the light spectrum. And you can again repeat the analysis in the microcanonical case, and you get a very similar situation as here. So the very heavy states will be indeed fixed, completely fixed, and they will have Cauchy behavior all the way down to where you expect it to. But then there's also going to be a bunch of states in the intermediate region where you can get an upper bound, but which are not completely fixed. Okay, very good. Any questions? If not, let me switch to the second part of my talk. Which is sort of changing gear a bit. So this part will be about existence and Poincaré sums. So basically, so far, what we've done is we've assumed that we're giving a partition function which is modular invariant, and then we just have a partial information on that partition function, say the light spectrum, and then we just try to see what we can say about the heavy spectrum. But you can sort of change the rules of the game a bit and wonder, well, are there actually any, if you fix this light spectrum, if you fix, say, this sensor spectrum, are there actually any partition functions which are modular invariant which have that particular light spectrum? So from the gravity side, sort of the question would be, if you fix all the sort of the non-black hole part of your theory, so whatever, a bunch of gauge fields and scalars and so on, can this actually always lead to a consistent partition function, or can you run into difficulties at some point? Can you run into a contradiction? And sort of the way to, or one way to think about it is simply you try to, given a light spectrum, you try to construct a corresponding modular invariant partition function. So you try to find a heavy spectrum which completes the light spectrum to something which is modular invariant. And the basic idea is very simple. It's a Poincaré sum, which simply means, you start out with some contribution. Let's say we assume you have a state of weight of energy EL and ER. And clearly this thing here is not invariant on the modular transformations, but you can at least formally easily transform it into a something which is invariant under SL2Z simply by summing over all the images of this expression here under the modular group. So at least formally this thing here is obviously modular invariant. And then the point is that sort of, for instance, if you take this E left and E right to be smaller than zero, then this is a light field and you're summing over everything. And then you'll find that sort of the spectrum that you get will also contain the heavy states of the theory. And in principle, the idea is straightforward. Technically, it's quite painful because it's an infinite sum, and this thing here is actually divergent anyway, and then you have to regularize it, et cetera, et cetera. So let me just, but it can be done, and I'll present the full results in the end. But just for the sake of this talk, let me present a simple toy model, which actually the results of which will basically be the same results as for the full thing. Let's again forget about T invariance. Let's just take S invariance. So instead of summing over this infinite group SL2Z, we'll just sum over the simple groups given by the identity and the S transform. So basically, what this means is we define a partition function as the contribution of, you know, the actual contribution of the field that we're interested in, plus its image under S. So simply, I guess I never wrote down, but it's the usual convention, Q equals E to 2 pi I tau. So we apply the we apply the S transform, and then we simply get in this sum, because there are two elements, I guess this is a plus here, we simply get these two terms. And so far, this is completely trivial. And the next step, which is also extremely straightforward, the idea is to now transform. So this is, I mean, it is what it is, but we want to transform it into something of the form a density times q bar. And you can actually do that, and you can show that you do get a density, let's call it rho, of EL prime, E right prime. And that's basically the definition of rho. E left prime, E right prime. So basically, you just transform this thing into an expression which contains only the original variables q and q bar. And the price you pay is that instead of having a single term, you have an integral over a certain density. And the point is that you can work out what this density is. And well, at least to leading order, what it turns out to be is it's something like cosh 2 pi minus e left prime cosh 2 pi minus e right. Sorry, there's square root is only over this part. E right prime for e left prime and e right prime bigger than 0, and it vanishes elsewhere. So basically, that's what I already implied by the boundaries of this integral here. The integral really only goes from 0 to infinity. Naively, you might have expected that it goes from minus e over 12 to infinity, because a priori there states all the way down to minus e over 12. That's what unitarity allows. But it turns out that this thing here is actually only vanishes if e left prime and e right prime are both positive. And again, this has a very nice interpretation in terms of gravity. Because if you plot the diagram there, let me get this right. Let's again plot it in terms of delta left and delta right. So just so that we start from zero. And then E left and E right are at C over 24. What this tells you is that this density here, the density that you obtain from this image of the S transform, has support only in the uncensored region up here. So by doing this sum over the images, or well, in this case, just this one term, image or under S, it tells you that you will never add new states in the censored region. And this is actually a very nice result, and from the gravity side makes a lot of sense, because, well, eventually you'll want to do the full sum over the full modular group, but that, if you do that, the result is essentially the same. I'll come back to that in a second. And the sort of the interpretation of this sum over the images is that the images give black holes in the theory. So it's like evaluating the gravitational path integral, and you evaluate, you sum over saddle points, et cetera, et cetera. It's basically the usual fairy tale story. And then for this to make sense, you really want to make sure that the image terms that you get only give stuff which can really come from black holes. So it had better be in the uncensored region. And this computation here shows that this is indeed the case. So it's a very nice, from sort of from a holographic point of view, it's very nice, because it tells you that sort of what you believe about ADS 3 CFD2 duality and the fairy tales actually makes sense if you do the detailed computation. Purely for, if you don't care about gravity, if you only care about conformal field theory, or even more narrowly, if you only care about modular forms, it also tells you something very nice, which is basically if you have this gives you a recipe that if you fix your censored spectrum, so basically, if, for instance, you take one state of EL and ER, which is, I don't know, somewhere here, then this gives you a recipe for how you can obtain a modular invariant partition function which has exactly this censored spectrum. Because, and then obviously, by linear combination of this approach, you can basically fix, by taking linear combinations, whatever light, whatever uncensored spectrum you take, you can turn into a modular invariant partition function, at least for a finite number of light states.
Could you explain why your state to be sensor spectrum? I mean, you know, in the gravity case, you do have states which are these particle light states of these spectrum in between the black hole and the black hole. So what's the reason you is that part of your assumption of what gravity is, that it has only sensor spectrum in the spectrum?
No, the assumption I'm making is that the reason I'm calling it the sensor spectrum, this is the uncensored spectrum, is that if you have a state in the uncensored spectrum, then there's two possibilities. It could either come from a black hole or it could come from something else, like the particle states that you mentioned.
Yeah, what about these ones?
This is perfectly fine. I'm perfectly happy if you also give me a bunch of states.
No, I was thinking about these things which are in between the black hole and the black hole, the discrete states of the... Which are, you see, you know, you call them naked singularities. Are you eliminating these ones? They are part of the, I mean, classically, yes, you don't want to see them, but I'm wondering why you don't want to see them. Is it which one I'm talking about? It would correspond to a negative mass black hole. Like in 2 plus 1 gravity, you know, when you go around a particle, it could be elliptic, which would be a black, hyperbolic, which would be a black hole, or elliptic. And that one corresponds to a naked singularity.
Yeah.
Are you eliminating these ones?
Not necessarily. I mean, so are those states that you would expect to, if you do this fairy tale sum, for instance, to show up in the images of the black hole, or are those states that are already present, so to speak, in the vacuum sector of gravity?
I don't know. I guess it's your choice. I guess that's the question. Quantum gravity is going to tell you whether you have to include them. I was trying to understand from your perspective whether your construction is just you decide that you're not going to include any of these states.
I mean,
the answer.
If you want to, you can include them. I mean, all this construction does is it guarantees you that if you, so to speak, include them in the vacuum sector, so if that's only in the original term that you start out with, that you will never get similar states which violate cosmic censorship in the images.
If you put one, you just get one.
Right, so if you put one here, then you will get a bunch of images up here,
but they're all
in the uncensored region. That's all I'm claiming. But I mean, basically, it's a statement about your freedom of how to choose the censored states, whether that be particles or whether that be more exotic things, that this formalism doesn't really care about that. Other questions? Okay, so let me say a couple of more things about what this density and rho really looks like. I mean, in this case here, it's you can basically read off directly from the explicit expression. So there are three properties that are important to us. Well, first of all, it's simply it exists. So I mean, in this case, by existence, I mean there are no censored states, no new censored states that show up using this procedure. So everything is in the uncensored region. So that's what we've been talking about so far. That's very nice. The second thing is you want to be able to interpret rho as a spectral density. So it had better be positive. And if you look at this expression here, then you see that in particular, if you choose E left and E right to be both smaller than zero, so if you're in this particular region here, then it turns out that the spectral density is indeed positive. So it is positive, but only if, or at least a priori, only if E left and E right are both smaller than zero. So sort of the simplest thing that you would probably do here is you take the original state here to be the vacuum. And in this case, E left and E right are minus 0 over 24. Then again, you can just simply, looking at this expression here, you see that the density is positive. And actually, if you look at it in that case, you see that you do indeed recover the correct Carney behavior immediately. So it's kind of, this is, if you so want, the more refined version of the Carney formula, which, depending on your light spectrum, holds all the way or almost all the way down to the states with energy zero. It is no longer true that this is positive if you take a state which is not in this region here. So for instance, you could, if you wanted to, as I mentioned before, if you want to have particle states which are in the uncentered region, you can again repeat the analysis. And again, what you will get is you'll get some density only in the uncentered region, but this is not necessarily going to be a positive density. So you'll have to be more careful about ensuring positivity. I mean, obviously, if you have a bunch of states, you can just try to make sure that the total contribution does indeed lead to something positive. But again, if you're basically, if you're happy to have your censored spectrum only in this part, in this region here, then positivity is okay. Something which is, so those are very nice properties. The third property is not very nice, because as you can immediately see, what you get is you get a continuous spectrum. And certainly, if you want to do this thing for a theory which has a finite central charge, say large but finite, that's not a feature of this whole thing, because what you really want is you want a conformal field theory which has a discrete spectrum. So in a sense, you might be very worried that this tells you that, you know, there cannot be a lot of module invariant partition functions. But the point that's very important here is that this thing is not unique. So the answer that we get here is not unique. So just if you fix the light spectrum, this construction guarantees you the existence of a module invariant partition function, which you can construct in this way, but there's no guarantee that that's the only way to get a module invariant partition function which has exactly that light spectrum. In particular, one example which immediately shows that this statement is true is if you start out with a state in the uncensored region, then you produce a model invariant function whose entire spectrum is in the uncensored region. So you can always take that function, you can add it to whatever function you cooked up with, and then you get a different partition function which has the same censored spectrum as the one that you started out with. What you have to be careful about if you do that thing is that you preserve positivity, so that's an entirely different issue, but what I'm trying to say here is you do get a continuous spectrum, but there's room, there's potential so that you can try to repair that by changing the prescription and so on. Okay. So let me, I mean, strictly speaking, everything I've said here, even though I probably changed track somewhere in between, strictly speaking, what I've said so far, this thing here is true for. If you do the toy version, so you only sum over the group gamma equals 1, comma s. But as I promised you in the beginning, the situation is really not very different. It's really not very different if you do the full modular group. So if, let me very briefly just sketch what happens if you sum over full SL2z, then essentially almost all of those results still carry over. So in particular, number one still works. So even if you sum over all images, so if you do the full fairy tale sum, you still only get states in the uncensored spectrum. So that part still works out. Part two positivity, if 11 Dirac is smaller than zero, almost works out. It actually turns out that there's exactly one term which is non-positive. So more precisely, if you perform the sum, then what you get is something like minus 6 times a delta function at the origin plus stuff which is positive. So doing the sum with the appropriate regularization over there gives a result which is almost completely positive. The only issue here is that you get minus 6 times the delta function at the origin. But this is something which you can easily repair. I mean, again, because the the answer is not unique. It's fairly obvious that you can just add, say, something like 6 free bosons to the result. This won't change the censored spectrum, but it will change the uncensored spectrum in such a way that this delta function is eliminated and everything is really positive. So there's this small technical issue here, but that's really not a big deal. Other than that, positivity is okay. But unfortunately, the third point is still true, so you still get a continuous spectrum. So again, that's sort of a not so nice feature of this procedure. I mean, more precisely, obviously, because of T invariance, you do impose integral spin. So effectively, what you get a sum over integer spin, and then an integral over the total energy, and then the sum over spin is obviously discrete, but what I mean by continuous spectrum is that the spectrum in the energy is continuous. Okay, so let me maybe say very, very briefly something about what this means for the existence of pure gravity, or let's more precisely just the existence of the partition function of pure gravity. So basically the way to obtain pure gravity is you're assuming that your censored spectrum only consists of the vacuum and its descendant. And then you perform the sum, and then you look at the result and you try to see if the result makes sense or not. And what you find is that it does have problems. So for instance, if you just really do the sum, you get this minus 6 times the delta function, so it's not positive, and then it's also continuous. So if you insist that what you get is literally the correct result, then you would say, well, that means that there's no consistent partition function for pure gravity. However, all these problems here are really subleading problems in C. So this is an order one problem, whereas all the positive terms here will be like e to the square root c, et cetera, et cetera. Also, a continuous spectrum, well, basically the idea is if you're allowed to shift your states around by just order one, you can always turn a continuous spectrum into a discrete spectrum. So sort of the takeaway message is what you get is the pure gravity partition function that you get is sick, but it's only sick at subleading order. So sort of the leading order in C is healthy. So if you're willing to allow for subleading corrections, then it seems possible that still you couldn't write down a partition function which corresponds to pure gravity. That is not to say that is far from guaranteeing that there's a corresponding consistent conformal field theory, but at least it seems plausible that there is a, if you allow again for subleading corrections, that there is a consistent partition function. Okay, thank you very much.
Let's thank Chris. Okay, well, again.